When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Hi, friends, and what's good, y'all? Schwebzy here, flying solo once again, as Jordan is unfortunately still out. I know I said over and over again that he would be back, but you know how it can be. Sometimes things happen and life gets in the way. Jordan is actually recovering from what I understand is a pretty serious procedure. I think he said something, it was just three letters. I think he said it was a BBL. I think I have that right.
Oh, God. Sore. Hey, Schwebzy,
what's up? Oh, hey, Jordan.
Hey, hi. Man, how's it going?
Good. I wasn't talking about you.
Yeah, what's up? What are you doing?
Hey, nothing. I was waiting for you to so that we could start recording together, so that you could start.
Wait, are you recording right now?
No.
Oh, okay. Here, let me just quick flick on mine. This bit doesn't work because I'm obviously recording anyways. hi, everyone. It's me. I'm back. I am alive against all odds. To my enemies, sorry, I'm still here. Schwebzy, how are you doing, buddy?
Better now that you're back.
Oh, that's really I know that's only fluff because we're recording right now, but I appreciate that.
It was going so well.
It really was until it wasn't, you know? That's just how it is, though. That's life. Schwebzy, we haven't recorded an episode together, I think, since, what'd you say before we started recording? Since, like, July?
July 15th.
Good God. Wow. Anyways, that's pretty crazy. What have you been up to since I've been gone? My question is, how have you gone on living without me?
I mean, I got married, had some kids. Life, I couldn't just wait for you. Life goes on. I'm getting settled into my house, which is never not weird to say or think about. I'm trying to set up my man cave, which I'm currently recording in, to like accurately convey what a man child I am, because I want my guests to arrive here and know at a glance that I like baseball and video games. And that is my entire personality.
Is that why you have a mobile with like a baseball and a Master Chief helmet floating around above it to help you fall asleep at night? You absolute baby.
Literally every other night I fall asleep in the recliner that's in here.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah. sorry, wife. But yeah, it's...
That's what he has to say so he doesn't have to sleep in the recliner anymore.
I need it to be a choice and not a mandate.
Well, that's what this is. This is a mandate. You and I hanging out together is a mandate.
Ah,
nailed it. Anyways, I mean, for me, I've mostly just been like sleeping a whole bunch, recovering from my surgery that I think Schwebzy was probably telling you all about. That was supposed to be between us, but whatever.
I would never.
You would. You would ever. You absolutely would ever. Schwebzy, now that we're like kind of back into the swing of things, what's going to be the schedule for us moving forward, just so our listeners know?
Well, shockingly, we are planning ahead. Shockingly for me, anyway.
Doesn't sound like us.
That's
at all.
Really, no. But what we've got in store for you for the off season is we're going to be recording every other week. So it's going to be the 5th and the 19th, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what comes 2 weeks after the 19th. So there's going to be 7 episodes like that. And we're going to be trying to make them, as fun as off season episodes can be. We're going to do some special one off episodes. We're going to have some fun guests, both new and returning, hint, 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 because we've only had like 3 or 4 guests ever, so that's a short list to choose from. And that will culminate in the last episode of the off season, which, if we stick to our schedule, which is always iffy, will be a very special episode 69 with the specialist guest of them all.
We'll leave that up to you to decide who that guest is. But Very excited for our off-season schedule. Also, if there's like any reason that you would maybe think that there's someone that wants to join us on the show, we are open to suggestions, whether it's during the preseason or during the season. Maybe we can bring someone on for a guest appearance and things like that. So if there's anyone that you want to see on the show, feel free to tweet at either of us. Since it's been a while since we've thrown to the socials, I'll do that real quick for us too. So you can find Schwebzy at Schwebzy, that's S-H-W-E-B-S-I, and then myself at Buntsingles. Or you can contact both of us at our shared Twitter account. That's going to be at InTheDeepPL. But yeah, Schwebzy, you, speaking of guests, you are going to guest and just guested on a couple other Pitcherless podcasts. So do you want to talk about those real quick?
Yeah, I did an episode of On the Wire with Adam Howe and Kevin Hastings recently, where we talked a lot about what did they call it? They called it variance, where we took a lot of interesting players from this past year and decided who would be the copy of that player this year. Like, who would be this year's Michael Harris? Who would be this year's Spencer Strider? And that was a lot of fun because those are impossible guesses to make because they were impossible players. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of good discussion. In typical Pitcherless fashion, we went very long. And coming up, I'll be recording this on Monday or Tuesday. I'll be doing an episode of On the Corner with our favorite misnamed person, Nicholas Professor Pollock. And we'll be talking about a mock draft that the Pitcherless staff did recently. And we'll actually be talking about that same draft a little bit later on today.
Yes, we are. I'm excited to hear that episode because I get to actually hear your thought process behind all the other picks. We're obviously, because we're a deep league podcast, only going to talk about like the last seven rounds, something like that. Everything post like pick 250, I think, is what we were aiming
for.
Yeah, post pick 200.
200. There's only so many picks in these standard league drafts.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's casuals. Not really our bag, you know.
Not really our thing. We're not casuals, you know. It's fine. But yeah, so I guess like it's a weird timing to release our first episode back, right? Because the World Series is still happening. But there are things that have been on our minds, I would say, recently in terms of just like baseball stuff, in terms of like the fantasy season for 2023 moving forward. Schwebzy, you had a really good tweet kind of pointing one of the things out that might be worth keeping an eye on as far as like developing strategies moving into next year, especially for deeper leagues. Do you want to kind of give folks an idea of what that was?
Yeah. So this was, if it's something you want to look up, this was, I retweeted this from the podcast account. So you should be able to find it if you look. This is from October 12th. I tweeted out that I was looking at some league-wide trends, like entire season trends. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking because we saw a huge drop in home runs from 2021 to 2022. And that makes sense because we're like all we hear about is how the league, like the executives of the league want to see more balls in play and they want a more exciting game because home runs aren't exciting, right? But
yeah.
So we saw a huge drop in home runs, and that seems intentional.
Can you say that again?
Nope.
Yeah, we're just going to gloss over that one.
So focusing on the 2013 to the present time frame, because that's when Rob Manfred took over, I looked at every season where home runs like dropped precipitously, and every following year, every year after a major drop, there was an even bigger jump. So like what we have to ask ourselves based on that is the league going to mess with the ball again? Are we going to see a jump, or do we think the league is happy? Like is this working as intended? Because scoring was down, and I don't actually think that's what they want. They want runs scored. They just want it to happen the way they want it to, not the way the evil analytics people want it to happen. And an interesting thing, I'm name dropping here. Trevor May of the Mets responded to that tweet and said that, you know, my head was in the right place with saying like this is what the league wants. So I mean, I gotta say, I don't think I'm expecting that bounce back in home runs that we've seen previously after big drops. I think this might be the new norm. But the reason this is all important is because if guys like Jorge Polanco are hitting 35 home runs, if guys like Marcus Semien are hitting 45 home runs, that like really changes how you have to draft. Like, it changes what kind of premium you have to put on power. And it, like, I think it was only a year ago, we were coming off of a season in 2021, 12 guys hit 38 home runs or more. You know how many did that in 2022? 4. That's a big drop in premium power.
Yep.
Now, stolen bases went up, and that is continuing a trend, and we're expecting stolen bases to go up even more due to rule changes. The shift is going away, the bases are getting bigger, which in theory means more base hits and a better stolen base rate, or maybe just more stolen base attempts as people get more confident.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going back to the days of 60 or 70 stolen base threats. I don't think we're going to get any like Tony Womack or Jose Reyes's anymore.
Ricky Henderson types.
Yeah, yeah, even further back. But I do think that we're going to see a lot more guys steal like double digits and 15 plus. Like these changes around the margins, like the ball flying 5 feet further or the base getting a couple of inches larger, I think, and you know, feel free to refute this, I think those are the kind of changes that impact like the marginal talents more than it does the elite talents. Like, again, like Jorge Polanco going from, you know, a 20 home run guy to a 35 home run guy.
Yeah.
So we've already seen, like, from 2021 to 2022, we went from 26 guys stealing, I didn't write this number down well. I think this is 15 stolen bases. We went from 26 guys hitting 15 stolen bases in 2021 to 39 guys stealing 15 bags in 2022. 84 players stolen double digits in 2022 compared to 75 in 2021. So we're seeing like a good number of stolen base threats emerge, or just, you know, be a little bit better than they used to be. And I think that's what we're going to keep on seeing. I think we're going to see more like more 8 stolen base guys become 12 stolen base guys, that kind of thing. Even if the home runs don't go back up, then that power is going to be at a premium, but the stolen bases are going to be more prominent. And I think that's kind of how I'm going to be looking at the whole landscape in this draft season. I'm probably not going to chase stolen bases, but I will be paying big for power.
That's something that I noticed actually on some of my own teams. Is I felt like I didn't really necessarily chase stolen bases last year completely, because I felt like I was able to accrue enough guys who were able to get me like 8 to 10 or like up to like 15 stolen bases and things like that. And just due to that, I feel like I finished fairly well in stolen bases in most of my leagues that cared about that stat. I do think that the bigger bases are just going to benefit people in general and are going to make people more aggressive on the base paths. And I think it will lead to more stolen bases, not even just more stolen base attempts. As far as helping the mid-range folks more than it will like the top tier folks, I think it's going to just be more of like a rising tide raises all ships sort of thing. I think it's going to help everyone pretty equally. But yeah, aggression on the base paths is definitely going to, I think, increase in the coming year. And I think we're going to see guys. I really do think that next year we'll see someone steal 50 plus bags.
Who's going to be?
Oh man, that's really, really hard. I would say someone
like an Acuna.
I think Acuna could do it if he stays healthy. I think there might be concerns to a certain extent about
letting him
run that much.
John Dalberti, Mondesi?
No. I'm trying to think. Probably someone I think like Bobby Witt Jr. could steal 50 bags.
That's aggressive.
He stole 30 this year, didn't he?
I think so.
Something like that. I think that there's a reasonable expectation that he could probably steal that many. I think anyone that has like top like 95th percentile speed, if they're also a good base runner, has the opportunity to steal 30 plus this year. And I think there will be someone that steals 50 though. I don't think so, but I feel like the rule changes are going to encourage that type of base stealing behavior, and someone's going to hit it.
I'm boldly predicting that Brandon Nimmo steals 5 bases next year.
5. Are you writing that down in the notes for our bold predictions episode?
No.
Is that going to be a board bet that we always do a super good job of keeping track of?
He's got like 90th percentile sprint speed, and he has topped 5 stolen bases exactly once in his career.
He's just not a guy. The only time he gets a good jump is after a walk out of the batter's box. That's pretty much it.
Runs like a baby giraffe. A fast baby giraffe, but a baby giraffe nonetheless.
Pretty good. Yeah. I'm trying to think like what else we were kind of thinking about. What else is something that we were thinking about in terms of things that were on our minds? It was
we're gawking at the some of the early ADP things that we've been seeing.
Yes. That's what it was.
Looking at ADP at this time of year is weird because
it's incredibly weird.
It's early November. Yes. The only drafts that are going on really are draft champions, like draft and hold kind of leagues in NFC. Yeah. And these are supposedly ostensibly these are the sharp players. These are the guys that, you know fantasy baseball inside and out and are, you know, onto the trends before their trends. So like maybe these early ADP numbers aren't going to reflect what the actual draft landscape is like in 3 or 4 months, but yeah, there are some early numbers that are really eye opening.
Yeah, there's so much that can change. Obviously, we have a lot of free agency ahead of us too. That's going to affect the stock of certain players. Some weird ones that Schwabzy and I, just two that we kind of like looked at and we're kind of like tilting our heads at. For me, one of them was Trevor Story going at 67 overall. That one kind of made me shake my head a little bit. Not because I don't think the counting stats are necessarily going to be there. I think if he stays healthy for the full season, he would be fine, but his average took a huge shot and that's concerning to me. Obviously the move to Fenway from Coors is going to hurt him a lot in that regard, but, the counting stats were still there and he did only get like about 400 plate. I think he got like 396 plate appearances or something like that. I do worry about some of the counting stats in terms of like runs and RBIs. And also, yeah, the average is a huge concern for me. And I think that 67, he might be a little bit too expensive for me. And I think I could probably find just as good, if not better value, waiting a couple rounds on a shortstop. Yeah, I don't know.
The one that's blowing my mind is Corbin Carroll at number 61.
Yeah.
Or so he's ranked 61st, but with an ADP of 64. I actually, when I was talking to Adam Howe about this pick when we were doing On the Wire, and he told me that I should be thinking of Corbin Carroll as this year's Bobby Witt, basically. And it makes sense in that light. It just, I think this is just showing what kind of drafter I am and what kind of like the risk averse player that I am. I'm never going to be first on the bandwagon for a player like that. Not when like the players around Corbin Carroll are like, actually this is an awkward range because it's basically all pitchers and then like Starling Marte, who's trending downwards, Adelis Garcia, who is maybe amazing.
Volatile, I think, would be the best way to describe him.
He's a player that I struggle with, but Trevor Story is right around there.
Mm-hmm.
Adley, Dansby.
I would not take Dansby.
Yeah, so it's an interesting range. Like, I actually think if I'm drafting and we're in the sixth round, I'm just taking a pitcher. Like, I can't see myself taking any of these hitters at this range. Maybe that's why Corbin Carroll is up here, because people look at the other hitters that they could be taking and say, why not take a shot at the guy who could be a first or second rounder next year? But yeah, could not be me.
Yeah. To reiterate on Story too, just real quick, I think for me, it's like he does have second base and shortstop eligibility, at least on NFBC, which is really important to note. Obviously, that's great to have, but I think I would rather just wait for someone like Tommy Edman, who's going on average like 15 picks later, 16 picks later.
Dude, Corey Seager is going at 76. Imagine taking Trevor Story before Corey Seager. Like, why?
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that.
Just for the speed, I guess? The possible
speed? I think Seager's average took a pretty... No, it's 245, which is not, like, superb by any means, but it's...
That was after an abysmal BABIP in the first half.
It's true. It is very
true.
He
had a 242 BABIP on the year when he's got a career 317. Like, come on.
Oh, God. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I just feel like there's better options out there. I don't know. It's weird at this point, and obviously this is super, depending on how you're drafting, it's like super like team contextual as well, and because there's only 12 total drafts that have happened on NFBC, again, this is like all the people who are like, I'd say, quote unquote, like, if I'm being honest, degenerates, who are doing it this early. Like, I respect it, don't get me wrong, I definitely respect it, but at the same time, this is so early, and I would be so gun shy in drafting at this point in time.
Yeah, but let me be clear. I love every one of you because you're the only people out there that the 12, what is it, 12 times 15, the like you guys, like, you're the only people giving us anything to talk about. So thank you. You're the only reason we have ADP right now.
Thank you for letting us farm content off of you. We appreciate it. But yeah, there's some iffy, and I think it's obviously this is all going to change. I got to ask you a question, Chubbsy. I know this isn't necessarily our territory, but are you surprised that Fernando Tatis Jr. is going like 30th overall right now?
I refuse to talk about Fernando Tatis after I took him first overall in TGFBI last year and got literally zero statistics out of him.
Ooh. Yeah, that's
no,
hard.
He is probably still the game for game best player in baseball, like as far as fantasy goes.
For sure.
So. These are leagues where upside is king. You can tell by looking at this ADP. So many of the picks that we're scratching our heads over are guys who can outperform their draft spot by 4 or 5 rounds. Like the reason Corbin Carroll's being drafted 60 is because he could be a second, third rounder next year. Same thing for Trevor Story. If Trevor Story does what he did just 2 years ago, he'd be a third rounder again. The upside is king in this sort of leagues. Playing it safe does not win you leagues like this. And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind when we're looking at these ADPs.
True. So one other thing that kind of like poked out to me as well is I was just like kind of poking through pictures here. And I saw that George Kirby is actually going before Logan Gilbert in most drafts. And I actually thought it might be the other way around. Just before even taking a peek at any ADPs. What is your preference between these two pitchers, Schwebzy? I'm personally more of a Kirby fan myself. I think that like the super duper low walk rate is really great. He commands both of his fastballs super well. He kind of lacks a secondary pitch that's really dominant, which is concerning, but at the same time, he just doesn't give up free passes. So he limits the damage that way. Do you have a preference between these two?
Today, I like Gilbert more. Tomorrow, I might like Kirby more. But the reason I do like Gilbert more at the moment is because he was the one that seemed to be developing a breaking pitch the most at the end of the season. And both of these guys have that really strong base of an elite fastball.
Yes.
But Kirby has better control, but Gilbert, they both do have elite fastballs. And the thing standing between either of them and true acehood is... probably an elite breaking ball or, you know, two quality off-speed thing offerings. And I think Gilbert's probably closer to that at the moment.
I can take that. There's a lot of really interesting pitchers around this area of the draft, like right around like 100 to like 110, 120. It's very curious to me. Like I see like, let's see here. So Logan Gilbert, and then like right past Logan Gilbert, like they're basically getting taken at the exact same point in draft so far. Hunter Green. Like between Logan Gilbert and Hunter Green, who would you be more interested in taking? I think that's an interesting one.
That is an interesting one. Oh, probably like that. I think that's upside versus certainty. Like if I wanted the upside pick, I would go Green. It might depend on who my first or second pitcher, or if I had a pitcher at all at that point in the draft. Like if I had two pitchers I trusted, I'd probably go green. If I wanted to swing for the moon, but if I needed some certainty, I'd probably go Gilbert there, because that home run problem for Green is probably not going away immediately. It's an electric, but super straight, super hittable fastball.
Yes.
And I don't know what'll make that change.
Nor do I. And like, there's going to be so much for us to break down and like nitpick about once spring training comes around, to see if there have been any like changes implemented in terms of like approach or working on new pitches or anything like that, or adjusting like how you deploy your repertoire, things like that. It's going to be so interesting to actually break all that stuff down and see how folks have grown over the off season.
Pitching is deep in general this year, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I think we have a pretty good stable of folks that we can go to and look at. I mean, I look at some of the people that are further down this list that last year were much, much, much higher. For some reason, I don't remember Charlie Morton being at like 175. If I had to look last year, I would say he was probably closer to like 120.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense given his age and production this year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Trevor Rogers is someone that we'll probably talk about with you.
Definitely.
Because you did take him.
Spoiler alert. In the
mock. We'll talk about that in a little bit, obviously. Yeah, there's lots of interesting names down here that we can talk about. But yeah, there's just some of the stuff that kind of popped out to us initially looking at ADP from NFBC drafts, things like that. So I think it was important to point that stuff out, get a good idea of where we're at. Cubsy, how about we take a real quick ad break and we can come back and talk about your mock draft?
I don't want to.
We keep going. Or wait, are you saying that you don't want to go to break or that you don't want to talk about your mock draft?
I didn't want to go to an ad break, but I guess we have to.
Okay, fine. We'll be right back after this.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, we're back. So, Shwebzy, let's take some time here. You did a mock draft with some fellow pitcherless staffers. You're going to be talking about your full draft at length with Nick this coming week. The episode should be out at some point in the offseason. I don't know if the release schedule is necessarily going to be super soon after. Yeah, it's above your pay grade. We know this. But let's take some time to talk about your post-200 picks. So this is going to be round 17 through 23, the back end of this draft. You had the first pick in the draft. Just out of curiosity, who did you take with your first pick?
I went J-Ram.
I don't hate that.
It's an interesting landscape up at the top of the draft this year, because I think the reason I went J-Ram is because of the certainty there. And I will be discussing this with Nick, but I think the two safest picks at number one are J-Ram and Trey Turner. And Trey Turner has the uncertainty of, we don't know where he's going to go this offseason. Like if Trey Turner, you know, pulls like a Javi Baez and winds up with a terrible team like Detroit, it's, you know, it's going to hurt his fantasy value. It's going to hurt his counting stats. So, I don't want to take him number one, not knowing where he's going to be.
That's fair.
And a couple of the guys that you would normally consider for number one, like Acuna Jr., Soto, Tatis, have, either questions about last year or extenuating circumstances, like Fernando Tatis. And then there's Aaron Judge, who's been worth a first round pick in what, like two of his 6 or 7 years in the league. Like there's a lot of question marks. So I went for the certainty in J-Ram over the upside of like a Julio Rodriguez or an Acuna.
Yeah, I feel like you have to pretty much walk in with this, like at least right now. Obviously, it's gonna be you're kind of going cookie cutter with a lot of like your starts to your drafts, and you're gonna take the people who are pretty sure things for the most part. Which is why I think it was fine for you to take Jose Ramirez when you did. That makes sense to me. I think, gosh, I almost wonder. I really do wonder if Julio is worth a number one overall pick.
Why wouldn't he be?
Why wouldn't he be worth the number one overall?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he might be. That's the thing. Just like the full profile that he has, I think he would be a fine pick as well. I think that I like slightly more taking Ramirez because I feel like once you get past like the first like three, maybe four third basemen, it's a pretty big drop off.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe five because I'm trying to think like what? Like Ramirez. Machado, I would probably put as second best. Then it would be like
Devers, Riley, Arenado.
Yeah, that's like the five that I would think would go together. Yeah, so five. But I think Jose is pretty clearly the best one out of the group. Although I don't know, it's really hard. I can't say for certain, but yeah, I think that Julio might be worth the first overall pick in a draft.
And what one of the things about Ramirez that I like so much is that he is environment proof.
That's true.
I don't think there is a thing that Major League Baseball can do to the rules, to the ball, that will make him less valuable. A dead end baseball hurts Trey Turner pretty significantly. A dead end baseball doesn't hurt Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, he's definitely someone who's affected less by that, I think.
I think Julio Rodriguez is going to fall into that rule-proof category, too.
Do you think anyone else that's like in our... like? So I'm looking at the first round of this draft. Do you think anyone else in that first round of the draft is super affected by a deadened ball?
Maybe like a Bichette.
Do you think Kyle Tucker would be? First from like power
think...
perspective?
I still think he clears 25 easily. I'm trying to think of like guys that won't clear 25 with a dead end baseball.
And okay.
Like I feel like the question marks for me in the first round for power are like, will Acuna get his power back? Will Trey Turner? Can Trey Turner clear 2025 again?
Yeah.
You know, can Bichette repeat his second half and get back to being a year round monster?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't, every time I wind up at the wheel, whether it's first pick or last pick, I always start the draft going, this is awesome, I only have to pay attention like half as much as the rest of the guys, and then I'm just angry for the rest of the draft as I watch all these players I want get taken in between my picks because they're so far apart.
Yeah, it is. It is a real pain being at the end of a round like that. Being on the wheel, I don't enjoy particularly because it feels like I'm waiting forever. Even though I do get to make the two consecutive picks, it just I always feel like I'm reaching.
I know
that's
myself.
Probably like a fallacy that's like just makes me think that when I'm at the end of a round like that, it just feels like I have to reach for someone so much farther than I actually want to.
Yeah, I mean we're going to have to post this draft board so you guys can see what we're talking about. But yeah. I mean you can see the spots where you know people reached.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, so we did touch on the top of this. Obviously, that is in our realm. We're here to talk about the deep league stuff. So let's go to round 17. Let's start there with you. So you took in the 17th, Lars Nootbaar.
Guys. And ladies, you are going to be so sick of me talking about Lars Nootbaar this offseason. I'm actually kind of upset because he is already trending towards being out of our range. I think we it was he was at like 226 or 227 when we looked,
something like that. Yeah,
I'm just gonna make a rule that I'm allowed to talk about him no matter where his ADP or rostership numbers are, because
you didn't ask me for permission. We didn't consult each other over this.
Executive decision. That's my one demand after doing a month of solo episodes.
Okay, you know what? That's fair.
I love Lars Nubar this coming year because his plate discipline, his combination of plate discipline and tools are just so rare. Like, I would bet that if you were to look at his like Baseball Savant page, pitcher list page, whatever, you'd be shocked at the profile because I didn't think of him as this tooled up player. Because like whenever someone has like wild plate discipline, I just never think of them as like particularly toolsy. I think that's just I have it in my head that patient players aren't like super athletic, but Nubar does it all. He's fast. He's strong. He puts the bat on the ball. He does everything. And his plate discipline was elite. Like there was a period where he went down to the minors for like a day or two. And from that point forward, when he came back to the majors, he was like just short of Juan Soto for having the best plate discipline in baseball. Now, Lane Thomas did this in 2021. So maybe Lars Nubar is just a trap that I'm falling for again because I loved Lane Thomas coming into 2022. But I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for good plate discipline. I'm just all going to be all over Nubar this offseason.
Love that. What does the outfield situation look like in St. Louis? Obviously, like with the DH, there's more flexibility. What is the outfield situation in St. Louis right now? Is he challenged at all?
Man, I wish I loved anything like St. Louis loves trading away outfielders.
Right.
Like, just think about the last few years, like, who they've gotten rid of. They've gotten rid of Arozarena. Yep. They've gotten rid of Bader. They've gotten rid of others that I'm forgetting at the moment. I know there's more. Can you think of any that I'm forgetting? I know there's at least, like, one or two more prominent ones.
There's, oh, God. Did they trade away Adelis Garcia? Was he a Cardinal at one point? Am I crazy?
There's someone like that. Like someone who was like, oh God, I'm forgetting, but I digress. They've traded away a bunch of outfield talent, and the wild thing about the Cardinals is they still have a crowded team because they've done a pretty good job of developing bats lately. And, you know, with Arenado re-upping, they're going to have a tough time finding room for all their bats. But I do think Nubar has more than earned his spot out there. Another guy that I'm really into this offseason is Juan Yepes, and I think he's going to have a tougher time getting plate appearances because, you know, he's not the defender in the outfield that a lot of their other outfielders are, so he's, you know, kind of he's stuck in a corner outfield / DH rotation.
True, yeah. So I just looked it up, and yes, I don't know if he was traded, but Adelis Garcia was a St. Louis Cardinal at one point.
It's unreal.
Yeah, they've had a lot of very, very, very good outfield talent run through that organization and then find success elsewhere. Super rad. Sometimes the St. Louis Cardinal devil magic has to go elsewhere to flourish, you know?
It's, you know, the devil magic does not stop working once when they leave St. Louis. That's all it is.
Yes, it does. So... after that pick, you had to wait a while because that was like that was your turn. Before that, you picked Gregory Soto as one of your closers, or maybe your only closer.
No,
second closer.
I reached very far. I apparently reached very hard for Emmanuel Clase because after I took Emmanuel Clase in the fifth, there was not a single closer taken for another, what is that, 24, 20, it's like 26 picks.
Well, that's the thing. If you wouldn't have taken him, then someone else would have immediately after you, especially with Rick Graham.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Directly behind you. I'm sure that Rick would have loved to have Emmanuel Clase. Rick's really good at finding value. Obviously, as our resident relief pitching expert, Rick would be able to find value late in the draft, which he did.
I regret that Soto pick because there are a lot of fantastic late round reliever options this year. And Soto, while he's got some job security, at least for now, he is underwhelming compared to a lot of incumbent closers.
Yes. It isn't the worst pick, though. Like, he is, in terms of job security.
Great. Gregory Soto is one of the only things that you and I did right in TGFBI this year.
Honestly,
we both drafted him.
Yeah. I also had him in one of my auto new leagues. So that was very helpful.
Yeah. Folks at home, you're talking to the 427th and 326th place finishers in TGFBI. Maybe you should have listened to us. I don't know.
I have an excuse, which is that was getting a BBL done. What's yours?
Is that I'm really good in every league except for TGFBI somehow.
Somehow, some way. I mean, you were good in the leagues that honestly truly matter, which is the money leagues, right?
Mm-hmm.
TGFBI also important for the clout, but same time, you made off like a bandit in your home leagues this year again. But
I'm at TGFBI at this point is me just really trying to see exactly how badly I can do while trying my best.
Mm. Yes. Someday, Shwebzi, I think you're going to finish like top 250 this coming year.
Oh man, big ask.
One can only dream. anyways, so you had to wait until, what was it? You had to wait another 20. I can't do math. 22 picks.
Sure.
Before your next 23. One, right? Something like that. So in the 18th round, you ended up taking Trevor Rogers of the Marlins. I like this one a lot personally as a reclamation project. Is that kind of where you're at?
Pretty much. If you look after Trevor Rogers, like the starting pitchers that went after him mm-hmm. were other options that I was thinking of, like Rancy Contreras, Tyler Anderson, and I could have gone. You like Tyler Anderson. We're going to talk about Tyler Anderson.
Oh, I love later. I love Tyler Anderson.
Spoilers.
Mostly just because I have things in my head about what's going to happen with him this offseason. But
yeah, right. So if I was confident that Tyler Anderson would be a Dodger again in 2023, I would have gone Tyler Anderson here. But since I don't know where Tyler Anderson is going to end up, and I think if he winds up on a team with like bad pitching infrastructure in place, that he could crater. But I wound up going with Trevor Rogers. And I do think that Trevor Rogers is one of the higher upside bounce back picks available. And getting him in the 18th, I shouldn't ask questions like this when we don't have the information readily available. But do you remember like vaguely where Trevor Rogers was going last year?
I can look it up real quick.
Yeah, it was very high. It was much, much, much higher than the 18th round. And if he can recoup any of that value, he becomes like a fantastic value pick at 18. And if he recoups that value, then it winds up being an 18th round pick that you roster all year long, which is not super common, as you're going to see from some of the other later picks here. There's going to be a lot of churn from these 18 and later rounds. So,
when did the season start?
The baseball season, or early April, beginning of April.
I'm gonna go 4/15.
Yeah, but
that also works. Submit. Let's see. I'm still looking for. Oh, it's taking a while.
I'm eyeballing it, and I think Trevor Rogers has better upside than every pitcher taken after him on this board, with the possible exception of Rowanzi Contreras.
So where is he going now, approximately?
ADP wise in general.
Yes.
Trevor Rogers is going 203.
203. So last year at this, or not at this time, but just last year in general, throughout the entire draft season, essentially from the end of the 2021 season until the start of the 2022 season, average draft pick for Trevor Rogers, 93.
Yeah, he went 86th in my TGFBI draft last year. So you figure if he can be even a semblance of his former self, and he showed signs of that in September. He did end with a thud in his last start, but after coming off the IL again, he was pretty impressive for a couple starts, before that thud. So I, in the 18th and later, you're kind of throwing darts, and this is one of my favorite dart throws this year.
I dig that. Okay, real quick, as a fun little exercise, last year, do you want to hear three pitchers that were taken like pretty much directly after him in drafts?
Patrick Corbin.
Corbin? Not there. No. Last year, not this year. Pitchers that were taken after him. I'll do the four starting pitchers that were taken after Trevor Rogers, according to last year's ADP. So you have Alek Manoah directly behind him.
I was just going to say him.
Much better year. Yu Darvish.
Much better.
Pretty good year. And then these two make me laugh very, very hard. Shane McClanahan and Carlos Rodon.
Yeah. So that could...
Yeah.
You had an 80% chance of making a great pick there and a 20% chance of woof.
Yeah.
I would probably have been the woof there because I was a big Trevor Rogers fan coming into the year.
I was a massive Carlos Rodon fan. I was fully expecting him to be just as good as he was. I was kind of I didn't really care about the injury risk with him. I just knew that the upside was so high, and I'm glad that I did buy into him. The sad part is I just really didn't get that many shares because I was always in drafts with someone who would reach higher than I was going to, which kind of stinks. But
I am begging the Mets to take the money that they would have offered Jake DeGrom and sign Rodon instead.
They're not going to do it. There's no way they're going to do it.
Please, Uncle Steve.
Steve, I know you don't listen to this podcast, but if for some reason you do. No. Just do it for Schwebzy.
Please.
Just do it for him.
I'm so sad all the time, please.
It's so fun going back and looking at ADPs from the previous year to see how many insane values there were out there. Just available. Yeah. Man. Anyways.
And I took none of them.
Aw, rip. I mean, you've always got this year. There's always this year.
There's always next year. Always.
Yeah. All right, so you took another pitcher with your next pick after Trevor Rogers. This was on the turn, so it was the very next pick you took. Pete Fairbanks, which I like this a lot.
I am not going to talk about this that much because I'm going to get a little bit in depth into Peter Fairbanks in a little bit.
That's fair. I like that one a lot, though. That's all I'm really going to say on that one. I think that's a really, really good pick. The next one kind of made me scratch my head a little bit. I got to be honest. Isak Paredes.
Well, this is the 20th round of a standard league.
Yes.
In a standard league, the waiver wire is flooded with talent always.
True.
Isak Paredes had stretches last year where he was among the best power hitters in baseball. This might be me falling for another Bobby Dalbec situation. But Paredes has... His ADP is all over the place right now. He's been picked as early as 217, as late as 431. After moving from the Tigers to the Rays, Paredes started hunting fastballs in specific locations and profited immensely. He hit a bunch of dingers. I mentioned earlier that I am not expecting the league home run trend to reverse. I'm expecting power to still be at a premium. If I can get 25 to 30 home runs out of my 20th round pick, I'm feeling pretty good. This could just be like, Patrick Wisdom Redux. Like, it could be someone who's going to hit you 30 home runs, even if, you know, the batting average is lacking. And coming up, he was known as a bat-to-ball guy more than he was a big power guy. Like, there's a chance for a massive breakout here. I won't call it a good chance, but I was gunning for power specifically. And again, looking at who was taken after Paredes, there's only a couple of guys that I would maybe have taken over Paredes if I was hunting for power. And I'm not mad about this. None of those guys made me go, oh, I wish I took them. It's just, guys I could maybe talk myself into.
And yeah, looking at some of the names, because I feel like the back end of the draft, especially in a pitcherless mock draft, is always going to be like super duper pitcher heavy. Right.
Dude, I hate drafting with pitcherless people.
When it comes to pitching specifically, they're too damn smart. I mean, it fits. Like, name checks out. Username checks out. But it's, yeah. I mean, there's really not a lot here that makes me blink at, like, necessarily. It's not so much just the fact that you took Isak Paredes that makes me like think, like, I don't know. It just feels like, I feel like there are better lottery tickets down here that you can grab, but I do understand taking like just someone that you feel like you can kind of like churn and just like turn and burn with the bottom of your roster, because it's you're just gonna be doing that throughout the season in most cases anyways.
Well, I've got a couple questions for you, Jordan.
Yes.
Where do you think roughly Paredes rated defensively for outs above average?
I don't.
90th percentile.
Why would I need to know that?
90th, because in Tampa Bay, defense keeps you on the field.
Yeah,
do you know Isak Paredes also had a 90th percentile whiff percentage, doesn't swing and miss a lot, 95th percentile chase rate. So as a result, 88th percentile walk rate, 73rd percentile K rate. Really good play discipline.
Insert Moneyball. He gets on base.
Yes. He pulled the ball more this year. He actually had a low line drive rate. So, I mean, if that comes up, then we could actually see a bit of a batting average spike there. I like him as a power heavy lottery ticket.
Okay.
Do I think it's likely? No. But, you know, if it was likely, he wouldn't be a 20th round pick.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rest of your. Ooh, there's a pick further up that I'm going to ask you about once we get done with this that I'm actually very curious about. But anyways, I think it's mostly, you probably took this person mostly just because you wanted to talk about them, which I think is funny. But we'll circle back to that one. It's an earlier pick, obviously. But you were on the turn here. You took Isak Paredes with your 20th round pick, your 21st round pick. Right after that, you took Luis Renjifo.
I'm a convert. There was a point in this. I mean, I've told this story how many times on this podcast point.
Yeah.
Like one of our community members told me about Renjifo and how he was hitting in a prime lineup spot. I was like, Renjifo, why would I want to talk about him? And I was stupid. I was an idiot. I should have paid more attention, because basically from that point forward, when I realized that I was a dummy, he was amazing for the rest of the year. He offers multi-position eligibility, which, you know, we all love.
Yes.
And newsflash, the Angels are not and are never very good. So he is a young player with promise who can play multiple positions and play, you know, and hit pretty well. There is no reason that he shouldn't, you know, outside of injury, that he shouldn't put up, you know, 600 plus plate appearances next year.
Oh, for sure. And obviously, if he's hitting in a prime lineup spot, he has some fairly talented batsmen around him.
Yeah.
Just like some okay people.
I actually want to what I want to look at is where he hit in the lineup every day, because it was like it was prime lineup spots pretty regularly from like the All-Star break forward. Here I have it here. He had 24 games out of the leadoff spot. He had 30 games hitting third, 20 games hitting fourth, 22 games hitting fifth, 11 hitting sixth. He's always in a good lineup spot, because hitting in those spots in the Angels lineup means he's always around Trout and Ohtani.
Yeah. And Jared Walsh when he's actually good.
And Taylor Ward.
Yeah. Remember when Jared Walsh had just like an absurd start?
I've never been a big Walsh guy.
I know.
Ugh. I don't get it. I don't get him.
But anyways, that I do agree, though. I think that this is like very much being nitpicky, but I like Renjifo more than I like Isak Paredes.
They're very different players.
Yeah. I think just like preference wise, I prefer Renjifo mostly just due to the fact that I feel like he's going to be in a better lineup spot, kind of like you said. I think that's most of what it is for me. Profile aside.
As a player, I like Renjifo more, 100%. But yeah, for home runs, give me Paredes.
Fair enough. All right, and then let's go to your last two picks here. Oh my gosh, we're almost at an hour.
Gonna go a bit long, guys.
I thought I thought that we were going to be able to get through most of the stuff in like 45 minutes, but just
we do this every time.
I feel like we haven't lost a step in a weird way. I guess we've done enough of these at this point that it's kind of like riding a bike, though.
It's funny because I got back on the basketball court lately and I feel like I've lost all my steps physically. But I guess in my old age, the mind is as sharp as ever.
Mind like a steel trap. It hurts me.
That's the rustiest steel trap you've ever seen.
It was not stainless steel, as it turns out. but with your last two picks, you double tap pitchers here. So let's we can kind of lump these together. I actually would be curious to see which one of these you like more just in general for 2023. So you took Bailey Ober and Ranger Suarez.
Yes. Honestly, Ober is a player that I have not ever really looked into that much. I'm not going to lie. This was purely me looking at the pitchers who were left and going like, yeah, I think I like him the best.
Ah, yeah, you'll do.
Because, I mean, 9 relief pitchers went in the last 2 rounds. It was almost like kickers in a fantasy football draft. I'm sorry I mentioned fantasy football on a pitcherless podcast. Nick is going to have my head.
We're going to get defunded.
but a lot of people waited on relief pitchers in this draft, which is one of those things that you can't really predict, so it's hard to react to it because once you see it happening, it's already happened. Good analysis there. But so I didn't need relievers at this point, so I took everyone had already filled up their starting staffs, which meant the starting pitchers were pretty thin pickings, and I went Ober, who he's had plenty of really good stretches already in his young career.
Yeah.
He's interesting. The Twins continue to do interesting things with their pitching staff. Their pitching development seems to be on the upswing. You know, he's one of those guys that like this could go either way. Like because there were indicators that he's good and there were indicators that he's lucky. So which of those things is going to win out? I don't know. But again, this is a 22nd round dart throw, which is the opposite of my 23rd round pick. Ranger Suarez, I very definitively like more than Bailey Ober. I think Suarez is just a very, very safe arm.
He's he's a glue guy in any rotation.
He's so cromulent.
He's aggressively cromulent.
I mean, the Phillies continue to go to him in big situations in the playoffs and World Series. Like, they like him. They trust him.
Yeah. Incredibly safe. I think also aggressively cromulent could be just like the tagline for this podcast.
That we've been talking about like rebranding, like maybe the logo and the theme song. Maybe we could just rebrand the whole thing. We're now aggressively cromulent, you guys.
That's gonna be the it sounds like you're announcing a band about to play, like Scott Pilgrim's guy. We are aggressively exactly cromulent. 1, 2, 3, 4. Anyways,
you didn't do your musical number.
Shut up.
I forgot until just now.
I've been called out.
You announced that you were going to do a musical number.
So can I be honest? I started writing it and I realized it's going to be way more involved than I expected it to be.
So
and of course, it's a parody of a Broadway musical.
Was it going to with the musical that we talked about that you pointed out?
Actually,
to me?
You know what? I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay, so it's not that one? Okay.
I'm not going to tell you. I was thinking about telling you what musical it was going to be from, but I am not going to tell you. But yes, I will. I will be doing the thing, but I need to, 1, finish writing it. 2, I want to like do a pretty good job at performing it, so I might actually record it and then just play it at the beginning of an episode.
Ooh, just replace the theme music.
Essentially, yes. And then 3, I need to make sure my neighbors are really cool with me being loud because I just moved into a new apartment building not that long ago, and I want to make sure that I stay in my neighbor's good graces. So there's that too. But yes, folks, I've heard
Jordan doing a karaoke Mr. Brightside. You're in for a treat.
Oh, yeah, I remember that video now. Wow. Thank you, Josh Berry, for that wonderful edit that you did of that video, too. I appreciate that. Anyways, okay, so the lesson that we want to talk about here is something that we're going to do throughout the preseason. So what we're going to do is basically go by, like, by a 50-pick stretch in ADP, starting with 250 to 299. And then work our way down 300 to 349, 350 to 399, so on and so forth throughout the offseason here, and try to find a player from each of those stretches for each of us that we think is being drafted too low and should get a little bit more love. Shwebzy, I'm going to have it start with you here. So you mentioned this is someone that you actually took in your pitcher list mock draft. This is Peter Fairbanks.
Yeah. So this range, this like 250 to 299, there are a lot of players I really like in this range.
Yeah.
And
tons.
We had said that we were going to talk a lot about them, but then the podcast went long. So I'm just going to stick to the one that I wanted to talk about, which was Peter Fairbanks.
Yes.
And like I said, ton of guys to like in this range. But if I have to pick just one, I'm picking the one that I think can wind up top three at his position, like comfortably. And that I love Peter Fairbanks. He was one of my first pitcher list memes because I took the movie poster for Don't Blink and photoshopped Peter Fairbanks his face on it.
I forgot you did that.
He is affectionately known in the pitcher list Discord as Peter Starebanks. He never blinks. It's scary. It's eerie. I think he might rack up more strikeouts than blinks this year, honestly. But his player page, like, you can probably assume by how effusive I am that his player pages look good, like his pitcherless player page, his baseball savant player page, lots of red, right? It is so red, you guys, so red. Like, this is an audio medium, and I know I'm describing a visual thing, but, like, you can hear his player page, and it's the sound of a 99-mile-an-hour average fastball hitting a catcher's mitt while a batter futilely waves at it. Not everyone has caught on to the fact yet that he's one of the very nastiest pitchers in the league. Pitching Ninja, Rob Friedman, has been talking a lot about Friedman lately, and he's been putting him into some, like, nasty pitcher polls, and Fairbanks gets no love, because, like, the world hasn't caught on yet. But, you know, the sharp people have. The only thing stopping Fairbanks from being more of a surefire thing is, like a lot of very nasty pitchers, is injuries. And like a lot of Tampa Bay pitchers, is the fact that they're Tampa Bay pitchers. The Rays just simply cannot and will not settle on one closer. If I knew that Peter Fairbanks was going to get 30 saves next year, I would say that he was going to be a top two reliever, like, comfortably. But,
yeah,
you know, we have no idea what his role is going to be. So we have no, like, the... Well, yeah, God, the Rays just have any number of pitchers that could wind up being part of a closer committee. But I have a feeling that I will wind up with a lot of shares of Peter Fairbanks this year, as I bank on the talent winning out.
You Fairbank on it?
Yeah.
Nailed it. So also, just fun thing about Fairbanks. So he came back in mid-July of last year from injury. And... Yep. First two outings, he gave up one run and then two runs. And then after that, it was a total of 22 outings. Didn't get 22 straight scoreless appearances, 36 strikeouts over 22 innings, and only walked three batters during that time, too. So just like, I mean, really, really like an impeccable season after he came back, after those first two kind of like somewhat rough outings. It's disgusting. He almost struck out 15 per nine. During that time, yeah. Too. Like, it was gross. He's very, yeah, very good. So I love the value that you got here. This was mm-hmm. in the 19th round. You took him in this mock draft, and I thought that was disgusting.
Yeah, he had a couple of bad outings, and he said, I will simply not do that again.
Yeah, and then he had eight saves from mm-hmm. basically, like, the end of July to the end of the season.
Yeah, he had a stretch of four in a row at one point.
I think even just, like, if you could say that Peter Fairbanks gave you, like, 20 saves,
yeah, I would be drafting him in the 200s in a heartbeat, in the, like, late 100s in a heartbeat.
Yeah, easily.
Maybe early 100s.
I don't think it's absurd to think that he accrues that many if he stays healthy for the full season either.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's the Rays are going to Ray. Like, they have Jason Adam, who put up a 1.56 ERA last year.
Yep.
Like, who's also going to be competing for saves. And, God, is Nick Anderson coming back? I don't know. What about Kittredge? They just have, a list of, impressive arms.
Would you say it's a pitcher list?
Ah.
Nailed it. Once again.
Kittredge had his Tommy John in June, so he will not be back next year.
But
the Rays are just going to have a bunch of sub-2 ERA arms, and we just have to deal with that.
True, yeah. I don't think if there's anything else I want to say about Fairbanks, but that's pretty much it. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head.
Fireison's going to be back.
Oh, I love JP Fireison.
I know, so do I.
Ugh, he was such a good bullpen. All right, enough about the Rays. We know that they're amazing and great. I want to talk about the one person here from this range that I thought was being drafted too low, and I think it does bank a little bit on who he ends up signing with because he is a free agent right now, but I really think that Tyler Anderson very likely ends up back with the Dodgers. I don't see a path forward in which the Dodgers aren't willing to bring back a guy who threw 180 really, really, really strong innings for them, even if his price is going to be increased after the year that he had. And I mean, the ERA and the WHIP are both obviously exceptional. He had a flat 1 WHIP and then an ERA barely over 2. His 4 WAR as a pitcher was tied for 16th among starting pitchers. And I know this isn't a super perfect parallel to draw from basically last year to now draft season for this coming season. The Razzball Player Rater had him as the 20th best starting pitcher in 2022. If you take away relievers and starting pitchers that are coming back from injury from the 12 drafts that have happened so far in NFBC, he's going as the 78th starting pitcher off the board.
That is too low.
That's us reinventing the wheel and trying way too hard, I feel like. I mean, I still think he's, even if he isn't what he was last year, a 15-win pitcher who's going to be a 4 WAR guy and giving you exceptionally good WHIP, he's definitely not going to be the 78th best starting pitcher. He's going to clear that expectation. So I really don't understand why he is going where he is. I guess it's mostly just because of the uncertainty with free agency. But again, I don't see him signing anywhere else outside of LA. And if he signs there, he's going to probably be a double-digit win guy once again. So I'm happy to take Tyler Anderson at that price.
Hear me out.
What's up?
We've currently, in the Dodgers rotation, got Julio Urias, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May penciled in 1-3.
Yes.
Who's more likely to come back, Kershaw or Tyler Anderson?
Both.
you think? I mean, they could get both and spend $35 million between the two of them. They could.
I don't think they would necessarily be too mad at that.
Maybe.
If there's anyone that's not going to be afraid or that's going to be not be afraid to spend money, it's going to be the Dodgers, right?
It's true, but I think the more likely scenario is that they have their starting four of Kershaw, Urias, Gonsolin, May, and then they let the kids battle it out for the fifth spot: Pepio, Michael Grove, and Bobby Miller, and then they just do another reclamation project like they do every year, like Tyler Anderson, instead of paying $15 million for Tyler Anderson. That's my thinking on it. The odds are just as good that they do exactly what you said, but I can understand the thought process that has him being drafted this low, because if Tyler Anderson winds up on, I don't know, the Pirates, I no longer care about Tyler Anderson.
I don't think he would. That's the thing too, is I don't think a team like the Pirates would sign Tyler Anderson because they don't have the money to pay him, or they don't. Well, they do, but they don't want to spend it, I should say.
That's fair.
I think there's a chance. You talked about it before the podcast. You had mentioned it while we were recording tonight, but you also said someone like the Jays could maybe sign him,
yeah,
which I don't think is necessarily great for him specifically. I don't think it's a great fit. I think his the most success that he will see is if he stays with the Dodgers organization. But
if he wound up in the AL East in general, I'd be pretty out on him.
I mean, it's one of the most
unfriendly pitcher.
Unfriendly. I was trying to think of a more aggressive word for it.
Maybe if he was a Ray, he'd be fine.
I could see that. Yeah.
But yeah, I there's just I don't know, but then at the same time, if he wound up in like either Central, he'd probably be fine. Other, you know, as long as he wasn't a pirate. I don't know, like that's the thing. There's so many different ways this could go, and like the narrative that fantasy analysts are going to create for him is going to change so drastically depending on what team he winds up with. So it seems like a lot of people are just opting out of that whole, you know, multiverse of Tyler Anderson possibilities, and they're just not drafting him. Would you rather have Ross Stripling or Tyler Anderson next year?
Anderson. Not by a lot. I loved Ross Stripling this year.
What if they were both Blue Jays, would you rather have Stripling or Tyler Anderson?
I would probably take Tyler Anderson. Where is Stripling being drafted?
I think around the same area.
Is it?
At least that's how it was in our pitcher list mock draft. Stripling and Anderson went like two rounds apart. Stripling went two rounds earlier than Anderson in the pitcher list draft.
So he went, I don't know when he went exactly, because I deleted most of the list, or everything after Anderson, but he did go after Anderson in the list that I pulled for pitchers this year. In the 12 drafts that have happened so far in NFBC. Anderson is going before Stripling, which I think is correct. Obviously, that could change depending on where Tyler Anderson ends up signing. But yeah, I don't know. There's so much speculation that we could do on this, but we can save
that.
That's
the fun thing about fantasy baseball. Yeah, it's November 4th. Who cares? We can talk about baseball for hours still.
We are talking about the 2023 fantasy season, and the World Series is still going on. That is wild to me.
By the way, right next to Ross Stripling is Dre Jameson. I'm taking Dre Jameson there 100 times out of 100. I love Dre Jameson for this year.
Chip's just making sure that he can get an extra cold shot in there at the end of the episode. I see you. I dig it. Plant that flag. I got you.
Your boy Garrett Mitchell's in the same area.
He's not my boy. Don't get me wrong. I want Garrett Mitchell to be very good. Don't get me wrong. He's a really good defensive center fielder, too. I have concerns about a guy who strikes out like nearly 40%. He in some ways and in bad ways reminds me of like Keston Hira with like the high strikeout rates.
Ooh. Yeah, except he has other skills.
I think Hira, if he hadn't switched to playing infield, because he is naturally an outfielder, he played that when he was in college, I believe.
Yeah, but like, would have been fine. Hira, if Hira's not hitting, he has no skills. If Mitchell's not hitting, he has several skills.
So he's still playing good defense and running base as well. Yes, that's true. All right. Anyways, that's enough for our first episode back. We have been here. What? How long did we go?
I can go another hour. Are you sure you want to wrap this
I'm
up?
I'm done. I'm tapped out, man.
I'm not done making you. I'm not done making you feel guilty yet. I did four episodes alone, and you can't give me another hour.
That's it for our first episode back for In the Deep for the 2023 season, while we're still in the 2022 season. Thanks for letting us shake the rust off. Well, at least me. Shrubsy's still pretty fresh, I feel like. Shrubsy, we'll be back in, what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
With another episode?
With a special guest.
Oh, you're right. We do have a special guest on that episode. I'm very excited for that. But yes, we'll be back then. In the meantime, if you want to hear more from either of us, you can feel free to follow both of us on Twitter. You can follow Schwebzy at Schwebzy. That's S-H-W-E-B-S-I. You can also follow myself at Bunt Singles, spelled how it sounds. You can also follow our shared podcast account on Twitter at In the Deep PL. And with that, we'll check you out next time. Schwebzy, send them out.
Bye, friends.
Yeehaw.
I did it. I did the southern thing. You're welcome. All right, and we're hitting stop. Been a while. It's been a while
since I've been hold my head up high.
What's good, y'all? Welcome to In the Deep, a deep league focused fantasy baseball
podcast.
Sorry. There was a bit we were supposed to do. Okay. Sorry, my bad. Anyways, I'm not here. Pretend I'm not here.